RV Family Travel Atlas is sponsored by Jayco. Since 1968, Jayco has been providing a way for generations of families to create lasting memories. For more information, visit your local Jayco dealer or head on over to jayco.com.
And by the Thetford Corporation, the industry expert and innovation leader, Thetford has made RV travel a more pleasant experience for over 50 years. To see a complete lineup of products, visit Thetford.com.
And by Camp Casual. Family owned and operated since 2014, Camp Casual is committed to bringing retro-inspired dishware and home goods to the camping and RVing community. Visit campcasual.com to see what fun products you can add to your RV, your campsite, and your home.
And by Cabela's, the world's foremost outfitter. Cabela's has everything you need to get your family into the great outdoors. Visit Cabela's.com to shop for everyone on your Christmas list or find a store near you.
And by AccuVitec. Dedicated to providing your family with safe drinking water, AccuVitec makes UV LED water purification systems for your RV and home. Visit AccuVitec.com to find a water purification system that meets your needs today.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Jeremy.
And we write about RV and family travel with our three boys, Theo, Max, and Wes.
You can read about our adventures at RVFamilyTravelAtlas.com. And you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram.
On this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas, we are diving into the world of full-time RV living. Roughly 250,000 Americans have ditched their sticks and bricks abode and have taken to living on the road. This is a pretty fascinating idea for a lot of our listeners, so we will be launching a series of podcasts exploring the nomadic lifestyle.
Kicking it off for us are full-time RVers Heath and Alyssa Padgett, entrepreneurs who have built a business around helping people transition to living in an RV. They share their highs and lows, plus answer the most pertinent question, where do I get my mail?
You might think you could never live in 400 square feet or less, but we know Alyssa and Heath can show you the way. You are listening to episode 171, Full-Time RVing, Making the Leap to Living in an RV.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. Before we head into our featured topic, full-time RVing, making the leap to living in an RV with Heath and Alyssa Padgett, we have our RV News Minute, which is all about Stephanie's big week at the RVIA National RV Trade Show. And she was actually only gone for 3 days, but it felt like a week to me.
It looked like a week. I was gone for a week and I got home,
and
too.
I cleaned the house incessantly.
Can we put cleaning in air quotes? They can't see them, but...
When she got home, I was like, Stephanie, look, I cleaned the house. And she just totally scoffed at me. And then the next day, she cleaned the house, and I came home from teaching, and I was like,
this is how it's supposed to look.
This looks totally different.
When you said the house was clean, I go, Jared, look at the floor. Like, there's dirt.
There's no dog fur balls. There's no food on the floor.
Everybody survived.
Right, but we're getting disgusting.
Right.
So Stephanie went to the RVIA National RV Trade Show, and she got to meet one of our brand new sponsors that we're welcoming onto the show this week. So Stephanie, can you tell us a little bit about this really cool new company and their product that we are so excited to be adding to our Octane toy hauler?
Yeah, so we are adding one of their UV LED water purification systems to RV. We're going to be installing that in January. We'll track our progress.
We're pumped because we bring bottled water to the campground.
Yeah.
And we want to stop bringing bottled water to the campground.
Right. So on the fall gear guide, I actually reviewed a pitcher water filter that I had found to at least start to minimize our use of bottled water at the campground. And I told the whole story about how kind of we don't use bottled water in our home. We use filtered tap water. We use refillable water bottles in our home. But then when we travel, we feel like we get like ridiculous with water bottles. And honestly, anybody that studies, you know, plastic water bottles knows it's one of the major, major causes of just environmental damage that we're doing to this beautiful earth. So
Acuva had a booth at the RVIA show and you got to kind of meet the crew there. So what were they like and what did you think of the product? You had a demonstration.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when they reached out to us about coming onto our podcast and about us using their product, I was totally sold on it based on the website, based on talking to them, but then also based on the RV Geeks, right? So the RV Geeks, they have a really big YouTube channel and they're very reputable gear reviewers. And they have this in their RV and they've reviewed it and they highly recommend it. So I felt good. I was like, yeah, this is great. This is exactly what we need. But then they had a booth at Louisville. So I was able to actually see firsthand the system. They had it all set up, running into like a sink and everything. And I kind of felt like we can do this. This is easy. We can install this. We want to install it.
don't go there, girl. Yeah. I've been working my tools in my garage lately.
I know. So
I got an issue of Popular Mechanics right over here on the table.
We want to walk our listeners through that process. Like, how easy is it to install? But it was just really cool to see it in action. So it actually has two parts to it. It has both the carbon filter part, which is the normal water filtration, right? That takes care of the taste, you know, that all of your pitchers will have in it, like sort of your Brita part of it. But then it actually has this UV LED purification system. And that takes care of all the things that are actually really important. That is the bacteria. That's the stuff that the carbon's not going to squeeze out. Do you know that you can run pond water and river water through this?
At some campgrounds, you're probably getting pond water.
I know. And they're like, you can drink it right here. And I was like, are you giving me pond water right now? Like, that's great. But they stand by that. You can drink pond water.
And I know they do these for the home and the RV, but it's so important for the RV because if you're going to dozens of campgrounds every year, I mean, honestly, we don't know what the water quality is going to be at any given campground that we show up at.
No, you really don't. And that's one of my biggest worries with this is I'm just worried I'm going to like absolutely need one for the house too, which is always what happens.
Well, I got to tell you, you know, I mean, tell you, if we really like it in the RV, I'd be more than happy to buy one for the house.
Yeah. So I'm excited about using this product because I think it is a much needed thing that a lot of RVers are concerned about is water safety, water quality. So we're going to use it. We're going to show you the whole process. We're going to this winter, you know, install it, share that with all of you. And
you can check them out at AccuVitech.com if you want to look into this system.
Yes. And also one more thing, I will embed the RV Geeks YouTube review into the show notes of this episode if you want to go over and see what we're talking about.
Cool. Good idea. So what else was going on at Louisville, Stephanie? Was there an overarching theme for the show or some big ideas that you walked away from the show with?
Yeah. And obviously we can't cover everything in this news minute. So I just wanted to zoom in on the theme that RVIA set up for the show. They were focused on what they called the customer experience, right? So last year it was all about building more RVs and growing, right? Because the RV industry is experiencing phenomenal growth. We all know that. And it still is keeping going.
And phenomenal growth can mean growing pains.
And there has been, right? And everybody in the industry knows it. So what happens is there's been this cycle where there's more demand. So manufacturers are racing to meet that demand. One of the manufacturers that I talked to at the show said, Stephanie, you know, we are 5 months out on orders right now. They said, I'm booked 5 months from now. Said anybody that orders a rig now is going
to
get it
for 5 months.
And
to build them faster, they would actually probably need to build new factories.
Right. And I want you to think about this. What's going to happen in 3 months when people go and they special order? In 4 months, that dealer is going to be on the phone yelling at the manufacturer because that rig's not there on site yet. You know what I mean? It's like almost like the snowball effect. Everybody's unhappy. Everybody wants more rigs faster, but nobody wants the rigs to be built to a low quality, right? So that has to be addressed in the RV industry.
And they are addressing it. I mean, so one of the first things you did on the Monday you went there is you went to that service technician mm-hmm. challenge with a $10,000 prize. So RVIA and the industry in general are pushing for a better service experience, right?
They are. They're really pushing for training and education. And one of the ways that they're doing this is really practical. They're setting up a lot of online programs, which it should be the case, right? Think about the dealers who want to provide professional development for their service techs, but think about the expense of sending them to wherever, you know, a manufacturer plant. Or what if that service center, that RV service center has 8 different manufacturers on their site? Well, then they have to send them to all the different manufacturers or far away to one maybe class. If, you know, they really get these programs online and service techs can get into these programs and use, you know, the miracle of technology.
And also attractive to getting younger mm-hmm. service techs into the industry. So maybe if you're an 18-year-old and you maybe you're not sure if you want to go to college, you want to work into a trade, this might be a way to get that young man or young woman into this industry.
Yeah. So that was the one thing that they were really focusing on for customer experience was, you know, making sure that RVs can be both bought, right, in a reasonable amount of time and also serviced in a reasonable amount of time.
And also apparently you need to have a place to bring them. So there's the issue of campgrounds and enough campsites being out there. And look, we've been into RVing for 7 or 8 years, and campgrounds are getting more crowded. I mean, people are buying thousands and thousands of new RVs every year.
Yeah, and one of the things that RVIA is stressing to, you know, the industry in general is they're saying, hey, look, if you're going to sell all these RVs and be so happy to do that, you know, you better pay attention to where these people are going to camp. Because if you sell RVs and people are not happy with the experience, we, you know, can't sustain this kind of growth. So, you know, they're really focused on that. And they're focused on bringing the RV manufacturing, you know, industry together with the campground industry and having some sort of, you know, mutual partnerships.
A little kumbaya around the campfire.
Yeah, around the campfire. I don't know how kumbaya it is, right? Because right now there's a really strong push in the national park segment to experiment with this privatization.
Well,
right?
I think from like the RV industry's perspective, it's like this big fat cow out there. There's like all these campsites out there that just need to be modernized, updated, and maybe made bigger even. But they're looking at that as probably an easy way to get more campsites up to speed really, really quickly. But they want these public-private partnerships, mm-hmm. which we have not seen very many examples of good ones.
No. So right now that exists in that sort of concessionaire relationship in national parks. And to be quite frank, we have not seen a lot of successful concessionaire.
Let's be frank. We've seen ones that were bad.
Yeah.
In the Pacific Northwest, we went to a lot of these national park campgrounds that are run by concessionaires. And the lawn needed to be mowed, mm-hmm. and the customer service was poor. They were in stunning, beautiful locations,
yeah.
but they were being run by 18, 19, and 20-year-olds, and many of them were from overseas and didn't even speak English that well.
Yeah, frankly. And it was almost sad. Like, you were like, oh my gosh, this is so beautiful, and yet it feels like a little run down and dumpy. So we haven't seen a lot of positivity in that area, but where we have seen a lot of positive growth is in the state park world. Now, they haven't gone into these concessionaire relationships as much. A lot of these state parks, right, these states are running their park system basically as a feature of their biggest tourist draw to their state. I think of states like South Carolina, Oregon, Georgia. Their state parks are considered the gem, you know, of
something the
their
state
experience.
Takes pride yeah. in, and, mm-hmm. and they're really well run, and they're run by park rangers, and they're run by people that are professionals and that care. We've also seen great county park campgrounds that are run very professionally and I think profitably. James Island County Park, I think, is making money. I don't think they're losing money there.
Right. And I think that if the industry were willing to really pinpoint those state park systems that are just super successful right now and generating a lot of income for their state and tourism dollars too, or those county parks, I didn't see a lot of reference to that. It would have been nice to. Now, another thing that we've seen going on is these private, you know, equity companies are getting into the game. We are seeing large private campgrounds being built.
We're seeing real estate companies that are into hotels and condominiums going, oh, look at all these RVs that are being sold. Why don't we build and operate a campground? So, and guess what? The ones we've been going to, you and I, mm-hmm. RV Family Travel Atlas, they've been awesome campgrounds.
Yeah, yep.
So companies that are good at the hotel experience or the bed and breakfast experience or the whatever it might be, they're actually pretty good at the customer service experience at the campground level.
I believe that is going to be the future of a large segment of the camping experience. I don't think it's going to be everything. I think people are still going to love their state parks, love their national parks. But I think the market is driving this right now. There is money to be had in these private resort campgrounds. Businesses are smelling that in the water, and they're building that.
And they're not cheap.
No. Nope.
I mean, I think of somewhere like Massey's Landing in Delaware, great campground. We loved it. Not cheap.
Yeah, it's not, and people, and it's sold out. That's the most important part.
$90 to $100 to $110 a night, sold out, because the market is, allowing it. The market's allowing that to happen.
Yep. So this is a big discussion in Louisville. It's a big discussion for all of the folks out there that are listening that camp. You know, everybody wants to know where they're going to camp.
Now, you had a big discussion with Heath and Alyssa Padgett, who are quite the dynamic duo, really excellent content creators. So Stephanie, just give us a little bit of a sneak peek about this great interview and what you're going to talk about.
I will. Yeah. We've been talking for a few months now about 2018, really, and going forward and making sure that we cover the full-time RVing lifestyle, because it's something that a lot of our listeners who are not full-time RVers are curious about. So we wanted to do it in a way that really touched on the various lifestyles that are out there. There is so much diversity even within the
young
full-time.
Couple in their 20s, couple in their 30s with one kid, couple in their 40s with five kids. Retirees, snowbirds.
Yeah.
And what Stephanie and I like to do, if we're going to cover a topic that we are not expert in, we bring the experts on the show. We are not full-time RVers. We have a house and a mortgage and live in a neighborhood that we love and send our kids to public school. But we wanted to bring on people that can really speak from their experiences in a very authentic way. And Heath and Alyssa really fall into that category. And plus, Alyssa has a new book out about this experience.
Right. So these are the perfect people to bring on to sort of kick off these episodes, which are going to be spread out throughout the upcoming year, right? So Alyssa Padgett recently released the ebook, A Beginner's Guide to Living in an RV, Everything I Wish I Knew Before Full-Time RVing Across America. And Heath Padgett is the host of the podcast, The RV Entrepreneur, which focuses on building location-independent businesses while living in an RV. They both blog at heathandalyssa.com.
And I'm really excited for this interview and for Heath and Alyssa to kick off this entire series that we're going to do over the course of the next year. And by the way, if anyone knows any really smart, funny, good-looking snowbirds, we're on the prowl to get a couple on the show.
Do they have to be good-looking? This is like radio.
No, they could be totally ugly, but they have to be like articulate and funny and interesting.
You can have a face for radio. All right. So you're going to dive into the interview. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We are so excited to have Heath and Alyssa on the show, Heath and Alyssa of heathandalyssa.com, and they are going to address the big and scary issue of how the heck do I become a full-time RVer. So they are the experts on this, having done it themselves, and they're going to walk us through it. But first, we want to thank our sponsor, Jayco. The Precept Class A motorhomes come with Jayco's exclusive J-Ride Plus Ride and Handling Package and an industry-leading two-year limited warranty to make the trip just as luxurious and comfortable as your time at camp. Visit your local Jayco dealer or jayco.com for more information. Jayco, generations of family fun. And speaking of fun, Heath and Alyssa, you brought the fun. Hello and welcome to the show.
What's up, Stephanie?
Thanks for having us.
Oh, absolutely. I'm really excited that you took the time to come on, because I think that if there's anybody out there to sort of kick off our full-time series of podcasts for all the different people out there that might be interested or just might be thinking about it or kicking around the idea, you guys have done such a great job of taking your own experience and then turning it into just educational material. And I just think that that's such a wonderful gift that you're sharing with everybody. So thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Oh, so you're pretty young. Let's address the elephant in the room right off the bat, right?
Yeah.
So you're pretty young, but you've already been doing this for a few years now. So why don't you just kind of give our listeners like the Cliff Notes version of the last few years of your life and how the heck you guys wound up being these full-time RV gurus?
So before we got married back in 2014, I kind of came to Heath with this crazy idea that we visit all 50 states, and Heath is much crazier than me. So he said, yes, absolutely. And started looking at, you know, the best way for us to do that. And we found RVing, which we kind of assumed that that was just the thing that our grandparents did, because both of our grandparents RV full-time, or part-time at least. And we realized that it was would be really affordable and a really fun way for us to visit all 50 states, or 49 of them. We hit 49 of them in an RV. And ever since I think we made it to state 5 before we looked at each other and we were like, okay, we want to keep doing this indefinitely. So we did 50 states in our first year, and now we've been RVing full time for 3.5 years.
Now, was that a sort of a slow and steady progression over the course of the year? Like, okay, we kind of want to keep doing this, but how are we going to do this? And how could that be realistic? Or were you guys just crazy enough to kind of be all in and be in this out of the box world right away? Are you both on the same page with that?
I think it was pretty much a heck yes once we got into it, because there were, you know, you talked about, you know, us documenting our journey and sharing this and putting a lot of information out there about the full-time RV life. And I think a big part of that for us was we just didn't know this was a possible lifestyle for us. And so I think a lot of other people have kind of been realizing the same thing as well, because, you know, we hopped into it head first and we knew nothing about people living in RVs. We didn't know people, you know, were blogging and sharing their journey like you guys do and things of that nature. So it's just one of those things, like as soon as we hopped in and started traveling around, we started realizing, okay, this is something that we could do long term.
Right. So it's not too wacky to hear about retirees full timing, right? But it is a very outside of the box decision for people who are in the working stage, you know, of their lives. And of course, you guys can address that working stage as a couple. And, you know, as a family, that's a different, you know, that's a whole different world that, you know, will have different aspects and concerns to it. But, you know, as a young couple, you know, Jeremy and I always think, well, gosh, why did we stay so inside the box in our 20s? You know, we were very focused on our education. We were very focused on sort of normalizing our lives, because neither of us kind of came from families that like where people went to college and blah, blah, blah. So that was a real focus for us. What do you think about your life gave you that sort of like, you know, courage or that catalyst to get out there and do something this different?
That's a really good question. I'm not really sure where it comes from for me, but I know that whenever Heath and I were in college, we went to college together, one day his roommate came over to my apartment and said, well, Heath is gone. And I kind of looked at him like, what are you talking about? He said, Heath decided that he wanted to go live on the beach. And so he got in his car and drove 24 hours to California. And he's going to drop out of college and just live on the beach for, I don't know, the rest of his life. I'm not really sure.
I had a friend I was visiting. I wasn't exactly living on the beach.
But that is what you were telling people. And so I think Heath just has this innate craziness to him where he will go out and do anything, and he kind of goes to the extreme. And so the idea of living in an RV probably isn't ever what, you know, we pictured for ourselves, but it's been one of those kind of crazy things that we've just kind of thrown ourselves into full force.
Yeah, and I think even though it seems kind of crazy, there was a lot of rationality to it too, because, you know, we had creative crafts that we wanted to pursue, like writing and video and things of that nature. And ultimately, we were looking at this whole RVing thing and we were like, yeah, it sounds kind of crazy, but what's the worst thing that can happen? We go out and travel the country for a year, and we came up with a project called Hourly America, which was a documentary that we filmed during that year. And I worked a job in all 50 states. So it was like a way for us to fund our travels and get some really cool experiences. And it's like the worst case scenario that happens is that we come back to a full-time job with this amazing experience. Maybe we dipped a little bit into our savings, but hopefully not too much. And it was just one of those things like, okay, worst case scenario is that. Best case scenario, we figure out a way to keep traveling full time and continue this lifestyle because we really like it. And that's what happened. So,
you know, it's interesting when you said that, like dip your toe in and then maybe come back. So I think that that might be one of those brain shifts that could help some people that are struggling with taking this leap, right? It's something they want to do, but they're feeling a little hampered by the criticisms or, you know, the lack of encouragement elsewhere in their life. It's almost like you guys were looking at it as a gap year, you know, and I think no matter where we are in life, no matter how old we are, like everybody deserves a gap year or a sabbatical, right, from regular life. And it doesn't necessarily have to be this is going to be forever. You could just look at it as something that you're going to try, an adventure you're going to take.
Yeah. And then if it doesn't work out, like you don't feel that pressure, like it was a failure. You just, you know, you tried something new. And for us, like, I know we talked to a lot of our friends after our first year and they were like, yeah, we definitely didn't think y'all were ever going to last. You're never going to make it to all 50 states. And, you know, if you kind of just approach it like, well, we're going to try this for a year, try it out, see if we like it. If we don't like it, you know, we'll come back. We'll do the whole 9-to-5 thing all over again. But, you know, it eliminates that pressure.
And I think another thing to layer on top of that is it seems like a crazy thing to go out and do if you know nobody who is doing it. And, you know, it's like in our world now, we follow a ton of people on Instagram. We've met so many full-time RVers and we've connected with so many. And they make up a lot of our friendships now. And so it's a very normal thing. So even though we've been on the road now for 3.5 years, when we meet people and we tell them we've been full-timing for 3.5 years and they're surprised, it surprises us. Because it's such a normal thing to us now. But when you think about in the broad scope of things, you're probably only ever going to be the only full-time RVer in your circle of friends if you've never done it. Like if you're doing it at a working age, if that makes sense, like it's very rare that you would probably have another one of your friends who's like going to live in a full-time situation RV. So that's why I think it seems so weird. And I think that's where the internet has been super helpful because people are on YouTube and social media and blogs, et cetera.
And you can always connect with like other people.
Exactly.
Right. So I think is the statistic about 1 million people that are right.
Yeah.
And so you figure it's even smaller for people that are within their working years, right? So that's a smaller group and that's spread all around the country. So even though you are quite a community, it is a spread out community and a diverse community. So having that social media like touch point online for you to connect is probably even more important than say for a retiree that's full timing.
Oh, absolutely. That's how we've built our whole community is meeting up with people on Instagram who we follow and vice versa. And hey, we're going to be in the same town. We were in been in Nashville the last few weeks. We hosted a meetup at our campground. And so it's like, hey, you know, let's get all these people together who are maybe about to hit the road or full-time RVing. And I mean, you have to be proactive. And I think one of the things for us was when we first started, you know, like you said, some people want to do a gap year, but for others like us, we realized we wanted to do this long-term. So there starts to become the question of what does sustainability look like in this lifestyle? So it's like, how can we build relationships? Like, how can we build the finances, et cetera? So I think there's different components. Most people think about the money, but there's also other factors as well.
Well, money's important. We all know that. And we'll definitely, it just is. Like, let's not pretend it's not, right? So we'll dive into more of the specifics about that in our next segment. But, you know, before we move into those nitty-gritty concerns, which are super important, let's, you know, think about the big picture here. What has been the best thing, you know, about this lifestyle for you guys?
I think for me, easily the best thing is when you look out your window in the morning and you're someplace totally new. And, you know, typically because we like to go to a lot of national parks and we kind of follow the beauty around the country and the good weather, just like opening your window, seeing where you are, seeing how beautiful it is and how, you know, how lucky you are to experience it. That's always the best. We got to summer in Maine for 2 months this year and we spent just 1 month on Bar Harbor, which is where Acadia National Park is, just waking up and seeing the bay every morning and the islands and all of that. It was so beautiful and we just felt so, you know, so lucky every single day that we got to, you know, go all the way up to Maine. I mean, we were from Texas originally. So the idea that we could, you know, just drive 2,000 miles and spend a summer somewhere where it's 75 degrees and sunny and gorgeous every day is the dream.
Yeah. And I think for me, it's been that obviously is an amazing part of it. And also just the fact that we've been able to create our own, like what our days look like. We get to create our dream days every day. And some days that means seeing friends in Nashville and other days that means working all day long in the RV or going for a hike in Acadia or whatever, a new experience. And I remember when we were dating, we dated long distance. So Alyssa would come visit me for just a few days at a time. And then I have to leave her and, you know, like I would go to work or whatever. And so it's just one of those things where I just remember thinking like, I wish I could spend my whole day with her. And granted, sometimes we go a little crazy being in the RV together all day long because we work together, but it's memories that I wouldn't change for anything. And that's been a really cool part of it too, is we get to build our life together.
Now, as someone who works from home, I know what it's like to have a situation that many people think is the most awesome situation in the entire world, right? Like, I'm a rock star. I get to work from home in my jammies. But, you know, the reality is actually very different. There's a lot of challenges to working at home that I never even would have been able to imagine, you know, prior to doing it. And I'm betting that the same thing is true about full-time RVing. Even though you guys love your lifestyle and you're happy in it right now and you're not looking to change it, you know, let's be really transparent here also and helpful to our listeners and talk about some of the things that you guys really had to work through over the last few years.
Do you want to jump in first or do you want me to?
Go ahead.
I mean, there's some logistical things. So some things that we had to work through from the very beginning was internet. So that was a really big one. And that's more of a tactical, not necessarily a mental thing. But, you know, we've went through.
When you have slow internet, it is a mental thing. Yeah.
It's
is
a psychological torture.
Yes, it's so hard. We tried to, you know, work on RV park Wi-Fi for the first 2 years on the road. We were stupid then, and we probably could have avoided a lot of fights if we would have made the investment.
So now we have an unlimited AT&T and Verizon plan. We also have a cell booster from WeBoost, and we put it on our roof, so it amplifies our signal while we're on the road. And it's nice because when we're in remote places, it makes a huge difference. So I wish we would have invested in these things early on. We just didn't really have the money. We didn't know how long we were going to be doing it, but it's made it way easier. What are some other things? Like, I miss working around people. So when we've been around our friends in Nashville, I like going to work in an office for a couple of days, even though that's been like the whole point is escaping, you know, this. I get energy from other people.
You're a little social butterfly, and I like working alone with like no distraction. So that actually kind of works out because he leaves and he goes and works at a coffee shop with his friends, and I have the RV to myself. So that's been interesting, kind of balancing whenever we're both trying to work on something. And then, you know, Heath is on the phone and I'm like trying to edit a video and I'm like trying to listen to this one thing and all I hear is Heath yammering. So that's a difficulty in the small space for sure. But it's been fun working together.
I know for you in the beginning, you had never ran your own business. And so you kind of struggled with just figuring out like how to be self-motivated or just know what to get done.
Yeah, definitely when you're, you know, starting your own business and you're living in an RV and it's your honeymoon and like you're newly married, all of that at once was definitely a lot. And learning how to just, you know, the ins and outs of running a business and trying to figure out how to, you know, keep records and how to, you know, create these relationships with our sponsor companies and guest blogging and all those things that we were trying to build back when we first started. So that was a definitely a big uphill battle.
And you have to be self-directed, right? So you go from a job where you're being given your projects, you know, and your checklist, and you have to kind of determine that yourself and move forward and not just one day after day.
Yes.
Totally. And I would think I've heard this from other people. We haven't had this struggle necessarily as much, but I think a lot of people who have jumped into an RV and are working age have this struggle, which is how do I get my work done and not just want to go explore the mountains because they are, you know, sometimes outside and sometimes they're calling loudly. So for us, it's been one of those things where we've had to shake the stigma because as RVers, there's definitely a stigma that comes along. That's basically you should be spending a great amount of your time outside. Like you don't be working all the time. But our kind of thing is like, you know, this enables the lifestyle. So if that means 50, 60 hour week, so we can take a couple days off when our family visits or whatever, like that's what we have to do. And that's why it's worked for us. And we've been able to continue building up our income. This year, we finished paying off $30,000 of my student debt. So we finished paying that off and we went to all 50 states. So it's like you can do both, but sometimes you have to make sacrifices.
Yeah, I think that's such a great point to bring up because that has been very hard for Jeremy and I. We are on the road quite often working while we travel and we have a difficult time. I mean, I guess maybe it's personality driven, but we have a very difficult time like doing the work when we're in a spot that's like ripe for exploring, you know, and there's good food to be had and mountains to climb. And that's tough for us.
I think one thing to consider is, like, I remember back when I was working an hourly job, and it's like, if we got a few minutes on the clock to explore a really cool place, like along our route, I worked for a moving company, even if it was just like eating lunch, I'm like, I'm getting paid and I'm eating lunch right now. That's cool. And it's like, that was like my level bar of coolness, you know, for work. And now the way I guess I see, there's two different ways to look at it when you're exploring cool places. It's like, one, I'm here and I should be present. And in the moment, I shouldn't take out my phone to post a picture or whatever. Or there's the opposite side of that, which is the only reason I'm here is to, because I am working and I get to document this because I'm writing articles about it or I'm doing a video about it. And it's what it's going to enable me to see more places. So I think there's two different ways to look at it. And it's easy to try to lean one way or the other and kind of beat yourself up over it.
Right. So it's just a matter of probably seeing how you react yourself to the situation of being in sort of a moving target and also working at the same time. It's just a matter of seeing what your reaction to that is and what works. I'm sure that a lot of people in your community have found many different hacks for that, like whether it's work in the morning, play in the afternoon, or work for a full day, take the full day off. Like, that's probably very personality based.
Totally. I would say the one thing that we hear over and over and over again is that when people start out, they move too fast. They realize they move too fast. They know going into it, they're probably going to move too fast, but they still do it because we're just excited and you want to go everywhere.
Yeah, you want to see everything. So slowing down travel has been huge for us. And we're more of the let's work all day one day and then play all day the next day type people. We've kind of realized that that's kind of the perfect balance for us.
Yeah, because we'll try to do like a half and half. And sometimes we do, but it's usually more of like, I'm going to work a full day and then go for a small short walk or a hike in the evening because we're in a pretty place.
Now, one more question about, you know, the full-time RVing and working. Do you feel like you really pay attention to what your sort of work requirements will be when planning out your travels? So, for example, we've got a couple of big projects for clients, so we should really travel in an area that has more connectivity, that it's easier for us to get around, you know, or do you just kind of say, we're going to go where we want to go and we'll make it work?
We definitely plan a lot around projects, most not so much like where we want to be during certain projects, but how long we want to stay in one place. Because right now we're actually supposed to be back in Texas, but we chose to stay in Nashville a little bit longer because we were going through launching my book this past week, and it was just silly to think that we were going to travel while we also had this big launch going on. So we try to make sure that whenever we do have something big on the calendar, that we slow our travels down as much as possible, stay in places for a couple weeks or a month at a time so that we don't have that added stress. Because even if we're just, you know, moving campsites or moving a couple hours down the road, you feel like you lose a whole day on a travel day. And that was something that we definitely had to learn the hard way whenever we were, you know, traveling too fast.
Yeah. And I think for context, because I don't think we've actually even mentioned what we do, and I don't know if y'all say that in the intro, but I mean, like, for example, I had to fly out of Boston a few weeks back because I have a software startup called Campground Booking. So we're working on doing reservations at campgrounds. So I flew up to Vancouver with my co-founders for a meeting up there that we're working with an association and stuff. So it was like we needed to be in Boston for a little bit more time because I needed to have time to fly out.
We needed to be near an airport.
Exactly. And then so like this year, we also knew we wanted to travel up the East Coast and we do video production while on the road. And so we have a mutual client, which is Jellystone. We both do cool stuff with Jellystone.
We love
those guys.
And so,
yeah, shout out to Jellystone. And so we shot five of their campground videos while we went up the coast this year. And so like, I don't know, like we've tried to find different ways to intertwine our travels. And sometimes you need to fly out of somewhere, or sometimes, you know, it makes sense to like, hey, let's go a little bit off our route so we can meet up with this client in person or whatever, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that's helpful for people who are really thinking like, how do I work and play and do this sort of thing, to think about those logistics, which Alyssa does really dive into in the book. Now, she dives into a lot of other logistics in A Beginner's Guide to Living in an RV. And in our next segment, we're going to come back and we're really going to talk through some of those issues that, you know, may seem a bit overwhelming. Sometimes a change in life is so big that we don't even know where to start. And so we don't take that first step. We are going to dive into what those first steps may be. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We are thrilled to be here with Heath and Alyssa of heathandalyssa.com, who are our full-time working gurus. They've come on the show to talk to us kind of about the big picture of full-time RVing and why they've enjoyed it so much over the past 3 years and why they don't see any end in sight. But you know what? You know, it's only so helpful to stay up there in the clouds and like look at those pretty pictures of beautiful RVs in, you know, remote places. Like the bottom line is that there's logistics involved in living in an RV full-time. And they're going to be here to give us a lot more tips about that. But first, we want to thank our sponsor, Thetford. Thetford is the industry expert and innovation leader, and they have been making RV travel a more pleasant experience for over 50 years. You have got to keep your stinky holding tanks in shape, okay? Do not let the stink get out into your RV. You've got to keep that in check. You've got to stop the stink before it starts. And we do this. We keep our tanks in stink-free condition by using our Thetford products that we've been using since we bought our pop-up camper 8 years ago, right? They have all the odor control, tissue digester, level gauge cleaners that you need. Their AquaChem little packets get dumped into our toilet first thing after we empty the tanks. And we've only had one stinky blowout ever in our RV, and it was Jeremy's fault, not mine. It was his mistake. It was not a Thetford fail. So you can see a complete lineup of their products over on Thetford.com. All right, Heath and Alyssa, you ready to get nitty gritty?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So, you know, obviously, money is a tricky topic, right? Because there's no universal to money. Everybody lives according to different budgets, to different standards. Everybody has different needs. But everybody does need money. And if you are going full time during your working, you know, ages and you're not a trust fund baby, you know, if you're not retired, you're going to need to make money. What are just some of your tips for sort of approaching the idea of a remote income?
I think just understanding the costs associated with the lifestyle, I think, can be super helpful, because until you start understanding the numbers, it's kind of hard to really dig in and figure out, okay, what is the best way that I can monetize the lifestyle? And so for, you know, we've been on the road now for 3.5 years, and just sharing some numbers, like we went to all 50 states the first 53 weeks we were traveling, and that cost us $23,000. And our second year on the road, we slowed down our travels, and we basically realized we could, if we really tried hard, we could get our full-time expenses down to about $2,000 a month. And whenever you say that, everyone's immediate first reaction who's actually ever traveled in an RV is, for some reason, oh my gosh, I can travel for so much cheaper than that. Like anytime you ever say that, that's what everyone says. So for
and
sure.
Yeah, you can.
So, and
yeah,
are you like, totally, it's not a contest, people.
Yeah. Apparently for some people it is though. So, but yeah, we felt we could travel semi-comfortably around that amount. So we owned our RV. And, you know, we could get a campground for around $360 a month. That was a cheaper one, but it was lakefront in Austin, and we loved it. Now I'd say an average that we see, you know, is somewhere around $500-$600 a month. You can get a pretty nice campground for the month. So I think kind of understanding those costs associated with the lifestyle. So if you try hard, maybe you hustle and you do a lot of boondocking and you own your rig, you can, you know, full-time RV for $1,500 a month. Now our costs are a little bit more because we're making more income. And so I think kind of, at least at a first hack, is kind of understanding what could be the costs associated with the lifestyle. And another thing I'll throw out there is we bought our first RV, which was a 1994 Leprechaun Coachman, off Craigslist for $11,500. We then drove it to 48 states, kept it for a year and a half, sold it for $9,700 a year and a half later. So ultimately, you know, not a bad deal. We probably averaged about $200 to $300 a month on maintenance throughout the time that we owned it, and then we invested about $500 to $700 in renovation. So
it held up well as a good first RV.
Absolutely. So I think those are kind of helpful, yeah. I think, in understanding some of the costs.
And then as far as building a remote income, I think the first thing you have to think about is, are you an entrepreneur or do you want to have a full-time job on the road?
Yeah.
A lot of people, like, they just want to ask their boss if they can telecommute, and they work from home, but they're just working from their RV wherever they're traveling to. And I think that's probably the more common route that we see on the road. A lot of people just telecommute to their jobs and, you know, work the classic 9 to 5, and then they go out and explore in the evenings or on the weekends. For Heath and I, we run 3 different businesses on the road, and it all started with, we had a sponsorship for our documentary, which was a very interesting thing, because we'd never had any kind of sponsorship relationship before. So really what we were doing was writing blogs for them and producing video content. So we called it a sponsorship, but it was more of a client relationship. And we then moved into marketing, freelancing, helping an author with his book launch. And then we realized that we didn't really know a whole lot about that 3.5 years ago. And so we moved into what we did know, which was film production. And so it took us about 9 months of RVing and trying to figure out what we wanted to do for a business, because we didn't have an existing business before we started full-time RVing. And we really just experimented during those first few months on the road, trying to figure out what we liked, what we didn't like. We liked writing, but guest blogging paid really basically nothing. And so we kind of learned quickly that, okay, we wanted to be writers, but that wasn't the route that we wanted to take. So film was an easy way for us to be making a more livable income while we were still traveling. So now that's something we still do on the road, is film production.
So this year we helped produce some videos for Winnebago's big launch. They had released a few new RVs. We helped put together videos for those. So we've kind of scaled up more and more of those projects while also doing a lot of the stuff that you guys do at RVFTA, which is a podcast, a blog, and we have partners, you know, who sponsor content and podcast episodes and all that good stuff. So we kind of have a few different streams of income. Then I have my software business as well that is starting up. So we kind of took the route as far as like when we hit the road, was we had some money in savings. I think we had like $15,000 to $18,000 in savings or something like that. And our goal was to try to spend as little of that as possible, because we had a little bit coming in from the sponsorship. And then we basically put our heads down that 9 months while we were traveling to build up profitable skills. And, you know,
and I think the thing that really benefited us, that was, we were 23 whenever we started RVing. So we had no skin in the game. It's not like we were leaving these well-developed careers or anything like that. We were fresh out of college, still trying to figure out what we wanted to do with our lives. And I think our favorite quote for like that time period of our lives, we heard this girl, I think her name is Jada, and she was talking at this conference we went to about how when you're in your 20s, it's like whenever you make spaghetti and you're making pasta, and you know how you see if pasta is good, you like take it out and you throw it up against the wall, and if it sticks, then it's good. And so that is totally how we were approaching our business. If it stuck, it was good.
You know, I in listening to you guys just talk about that, it emerges to me that there are almost like 3 options that you can consider when thinking about becoming a full-time RVer. You can take the job you do right now for the company you work for and try to take that remote. You can try to take what you do right now and maybe transfer it to a remote company, or you can go the entrepreneurial route and build your own business. Is that kind of like the 3-legged stool right there?
Totally. Yeah. And I a couple notes on those is that one thing that we've heard quite a bit from people that have transition their jobs into being remote is that whenever they first thought about going full-time in RV, their first inclination was, my boss would never let me go travel in RV and work from the road. But what we've actually heard from a ton of people is that they've been the first people to do that within their company, because it's a competitive job market right now and it's hard to find good talent. And so therefore, if you can prove and validate that you can still do a good job while being remote, and maybe sometimes that comes in a little test run. We met someone a couple weeks ago at a meetup, and she said, I'm on like kind of a test trip right now. I'm traveling for 10 days and my boss is, you know, letting me check in and see how things are going. So more often than not, I think people are becoming more and more receptive to allow people to work remote, even if they don't think that's a possibility.
Yeah. I mean, we're in a big change right now, even in our culture. Like, I would say that so many opportunities that are available now were just not available 10 years ago. You couldn't even consider doing a lot of jobs remotely that you can now, just because of technology and connectivity that way.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So it's nice if you want to take advantage of it, now's the time, right? All right. So that, I think that it's really helpful in giving people a starting place for how to think about their income and how to think about costs on the road. I do want to say, I know Alyssa mentioned some of those costs. Alyssa and Heath, you guys both went through, like, you know, your camping costs and your rig costs. There, Alyssa really walks through each one of those things that people can consider to kind of make maybe what would be an operating budget before you start in this beginner's guide to living in an RV. So if you really want to start to crunch those numbers, then you need to go get the ebook, because there's a section in there that I think is particularly helpful for pulling out those maintenance costs. I mean, Alyssa, you even give people kind of a ballpark figure about maintenance costs, right?
Yeah, that is the most important thing you could ever budget for, because you really never know when you're going to have a tire blow while you're driving down the road, or we had our fuel pump go out and we just kind of skated to a stop in the middle of an intersection. So you want to be sure that you always, always budget for that every month, because if you don't use it in January, you'll use it in February.
All right. So we're not out on the road yet. We're still, you know, in our sticks and bricks house thinking about becoming full-time RVers. Let's talk about stuff, downsizing. How do you go from living in, say, we don't even have a big home, you know, we're like, what, 1,600 square feet, right? How do I go from 1,600 square feet to 144 square feet?
I think the nice thing about RVs is that they already have all the furniture for you. So you know that, you know, right off the bat, you can get rid of all of that. I think the hardest part of downsizing, though, really is getting rid of all of your clothes. Uh-huh. Whenever Heath moved in before I did into our first RV back whenever we were engaged, and he calls me and he's like, babe, I moved all my stuff in. All of the cabinets are full. And I'm like, Heath, I have like all the pots and pans and all the, you know, stuff we actually need for the RV. And so he had to move all of his stuff back out and basically cut his stuff in half or even into a third to actually see, you know, what would fit in the RV. And so I think that was really, really good and really eye-opening for us to just actually physically move in everything that we thought we needed, that we thought we used on a daily basis, and realize, okay, this like legitimately will not fit unless we, you know, pare down, downsize, get rid of things.
And we created a rule after we hit the road, which was basically, actually, we need to make sure that we revamp this rule and that we're still sticking to it.
I did this to like 2 weeks ago.
Okay. Which the rule was the 30-day rule. A lot of people have a 1-year rule. You know, if I haven't used it or in a year, it's out. So we implemented, after we hit the road, a 30-day rule. So if we hadn't been using it within 30 days or over the past 30 days, we would throw it out. And that was super helpful. I would also say,
I got rid of a lot of cords last week.
Just a lot of what?
Cords. Like you end up with all these chargers and cords and things, and I don't even know where they come from. But then all of a sudden you have a box of them in your RV and you don't know what they go for.
I would say for us, we had it pretty easy though, all things considered. You know, we were fresh. We hadn't been out of college for very long and hadn't had time to accrue a lot of stuff, no kids. So it's like our baggage element for all things considered was relatively low.
All right. Yeah. I mean, and I think that the issue of clothing too, maybe a nice, right now there's so much out there, so many resources out there for developing a capsule wardrobe, and people are using that at home. So you could kind of use some of those resources maybe before you go full time to kind of help transition out of that mindset of like having a million things and nothing to wear, you know, which is what so many of us have.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now let's talk about your mail and your address, because you, Alyssa, you know, you say in your book over and over again that that's the most boring question in the world. But I take issue with that statement, right? I really do. Because you say, oh, it's so boring. You know, people are always asking me, where do you get your mail? I don't think people are really asking you where they get their mail. I think people are saying, I write my address down a million times a day on things, right? Like there are so many things that I use my address for. So right. What do I do, right? In all these cases in my life, when I'm filling out my Amazon Prime shipping or when I'm buying something in PayPal or whatever, like what am I writing in that space?
Yes, I think that's a great way of looking at it. And we got a funny comment on our blog recently of someone commenting saying, "What do you even write for your address? Just anywhere USA?" And no, that's not what I write. But it's just kind of funny how people perceive this nomadic life where you're location independent and you know you don't have a physical address. So the biggest thing that everyone does, that I think every full-timer does, is set up your domicile, which is that's your legal address as far as the government knows. So any government documents, your driver's license, tax forms, anything, that's the address that you're going to use. And there's a bunch of companies that will set this all up for you and have, you know, step-by-step lists of saying, okay, you need to change your address on this form and then this form and then, you know, work your way through, because all of a sudden you realize just how many places know and need to know your address for different things. So it's a big process. We always recommend Escapees. They're in Texas and they offer you addresses in either Texas, South Dakota, or Florida, which are kind of the top three states for RVers. I can't totally explain to you why those are the top three states, but it has to do with the different laws that they have regarding this idea of having a permanent address. So we're already from Texas, so choosing Texas as our domicile was really easy for us. But, you know, they have no state income tax, which is a big selling point for us.
Yeah. And we also, another question that people have when it comes to business, if you do decide to go the entrepreneur route and file a business, is how does that work? Because that's a totally different ballgame.
And I let Heath handle that. So I don't totally get that.
Yeah,
one.
We're actually filed. We have our Alyssa Padgett Creative LLC, and then I have campgroundbooking.com, which is our software startup that I have with partners. So both two
LLCs.
Yeah, both those businesses are actually filed in Wyoming with a registered agent of the state. And that actually came at a recommendation of our accountant. There's a few different places that we were looking at filing, but ultimately we have our mail forwarding, our address there. So I think it was like a couple hundred bucks to file our LLC there. And they were just a little bit more friendly for people who were nomadic and, you know, that, you know, we're not in one place. We're all three full-time RVers, my two co-founders and I. And so it was actually startlingly hard to even just like open a bank account, because the bank account at the people at Chase are like, "I don't understand, you all live in an RV, but where do you live?" And I'm like, "No,
yeah,
we live in the RV." So that was a challenge to just go through that process. But eventually, you know, it's not insanely too difficult.
Yeah. And I really think that is what people are picturing, right? Like they're picturing having all of these situations where people are saying, "Okay, and what's your address?" And you're sitting there going, well, this is kind of complicated, right? So you need to have an answer to that question. And Escapees it can help you find that answer. And that's another thing that's great about Alyssa's book, is it really does point you in the direction of the resource that will help you solve these problems. I think that it's pretty evident that there's no reason to figure out all this information on your own, right, in this day and age.
Right. Especially when there's a service out there that will, you know, hand deliver it for you. I know we've Googled so many things over the years about RVing and making this whole RV life transition. And so whenever we were thinking about, you know, writing this guide and just trying to figure out how can we make RVing, you know, less intimidating and less scary for people, finding companies like Escapees who will totally help you with figuring out this whole mail conundrum, mm-hmm. and just saying, "Hey, you know what? Here you go. Just go to heathandalyssa.com/mail and I will answer all of your mail questions," keeping it really simple and straightforward for people. Because that is, you know, I say that's the most common question that people ask. And I do think it really scares people to think, "Oh my gosh, I have to change my address on 20 different government documents. And then I have to, you know, email all my friends and family and let them know, you know, if they want to send me mail, they have to send it here. And then, you know, it'll forward it on." I think the best thing for RVers though, with mail, is like you mentioned, Amazon Prime. I do have to change my Amazon Prime address every single time, you know, we move campgrounds, but campgrounds are great about accepting packages. And so we use the mess out of Amazon Prime. It's the best way for us to get anything on the road.
We've had no problems with asking campgrounds to receive packages for us. And we do our fair share of ordering while we're traveling. So we're always like, "Oh, well, let's look ahead and make sure that this is at the campground when we arrive there."
Yes.
Very dilettante-ish of us, but oh, well, that's how we roll. All right. Now, there's another conundrum that people face, and it's health healthcare, right? Because that's kind of address related too. We all buy into our healthcare through our state. And if you, you know, are nomadic or if you're a full-time RVer, that can probably feel overwhelming also. Now, I know, Alyssa and Heath, that you are not the experts on healthcare. But again, in the book, you do point people towards some helpful resources that can help them navigate that. And it sounds from reading it like you do know many full-time RVers that have solved their healthcare issues.
I will say before Alyssa jumps in and gives the specifics around this that we've actually been a decent guinea pigs of healthcare, considering like we've like
tried it all.
Yeah, really have like personally tried a good bit. So go ahead.
Well, I was going to say first, I don't think anyone's an expert on healthcare. I think we've kind of proven that over the past couple of years with how much that it changes. Is that you can try to learn and you can try to figure it all out, but then the next day everything's going to completely change and you have to forget everything that you've learned. And so that was the big hassle for us the first 2 years on the road. We just couldn't ever figure out what healthcare would actually cover us when we were traveling and which ones we were allowed to have and which ones we'd even have doctors in the right areas that we would need. And so it was just so confusing. And then we found RVers insurance through, I think it was Gone with the Winds who recommended them to us. And they will find you a plan. Once again, I'm a big fan of any company that will, you know, walk you through this so that you don't have to worry about it. They will find you a plan that will cover you depending on where you're going to travel and what state you're from. And so we started using them in 2016. And the thing about health insurance in America right now is that it's just so dang expensive. And so we did that for a year and we never had to worry about if we were covered or, you know, where we needed to, you know, find a doctor or anything like that, because all of that stuff was all set up and they have a great website and resources so that you feel like you are in the know as far as healthcare goes, but it was just too expensive for us. And so this year we found something called Liberty Health Share, which is not health insurance. It's a healthcare sharing ministry. So there's only five healthcare sharing ministries that are allowed, or not allowed, but
recognized,
yeah. Yeah, so you don't get that penalty for not having health insurance. There's five companies that you can choose from. And we chose Liberty HealthShare because it's the only one that doesn't require you to have a home church. So all the other healthcare sharing ministries, they're all religiously affiliated. But whenever you travel full time, you obviously can't have a home church because you're never in one place long enough. And so we chose Liberty because it didn't have that stipulation that other healthcare sharing ministries have. But you do have that countrywide coverage where you don't have to worry about, I have to be in Texas and I have to go to a certain doctor. And so we've really liked them. And it's only $250 a month for both of us, whereas we're paying more than that for just one person with RVers insurance.
All right. So it's not impossible to get an address. It's not impossible to get health insurance. And apparently it's not impossible to get internet, right? So the other big thing, the trifecta of concerns, is of course connectivity and internet. And again, this is another area where you really do point to the experts and to the solution and some people that can help you, which is of course Technomadia and all of their resources. But you do describe your experience with using various different providers, right?
Yes. So like I said earlier, like we tried using RV Park internet. It was such a big hassle. And we had a little, a jet pack, which is, you know, a wireless hotspot with Verizon. And we had about 10 gigs on it for a while that we would try to use that for our internet. And the speed and everything was great, but we would just blow through our data and data was so expensive. And so we talked to Chris and Sheree over at Technomadia and they're pretty much like, guys, just get an unlimited Verizon plan. It's not that hard. But in our minds, you know, we're thinking, how on earth do I find, you know, one of these black market unlimited Verizon plans? Because at the time, whenever we got ours, Verizon wasn't making unlimited plans. They currently are, but you get throttled after 10 gigs. So it's not truly unlimited. We were looking for that true unlimited where if we used 100 gigs in a month, then we weren't going to be facing like these massive slowed down speeds. And so Chris and Sheree, you know, found us a guy, or they, you know, they led us to this
you have a guy.
And And it sounds so funny because Heath is texting this, you know, this random phone number, just like, hey, I'm looking for internet. What do you got for me? And so that's how we got our first Verizon plan. And I think it was last year or earlier this year that Verizon really cracked down on these, you know, these third party sellers of plans. And so our plan went away, which was a super tragic day in the Paget RV. We had like 2 weeks to kind of figure out what we were going to do now that our Verizon plan has been canceled.
You don't know what love is before, unless you've loved and lost, right?
When you lose it, it's heartbreaking. And so you still can get Verizon plans, but they're a lot more expensive than the one that we had before. So we switched to an unlimited AT&T plan, which AT&T, if you look at different coverage maps, there's actually an app called Coverage you can download and compare to see where you have a good cell signal. Verizon is great pretty much all across the country, but AT&T is really good on the East Coast. They're not great on the West Coast, but they're good on the East Coast, and we were going to be on the East Coast all this year. So we decided to go with the cheaper option and go with unlimited AT&T. And it hasn't been as good as Verizon, but we do have our WeBoost cell booster, which we installed on the RV, that has basically ensured that no matter where we are, we do have cell signal. So if we have, you know, one or two bars of AT&T and we can barely load, you know, our email, we turn on our cell booster and we can stream Netflix, which is really what we're looking for in our internet connection.
And we also do have the quote unquote unlimited from Verizon. So their new plans where you get throttled. So if we don't have AT&T signal, we'll jump on our Verizon, we'll tether that.
But we do that just from our phones. Yeah. From a hot
so spot. Even with just the Verizon AT&T, you should be good to go. But we do recommend Chris and Shree from Technomadia because it's one of those things that it fluctuates all the time. So if you're not staying on top of it, like it's a full-time job to just figure out, okay, what's happening in the space and like where can I get certain plans? Because sometimes like there was this thing called the Mobily that came out, which is like internet that you could plug into your like dash, like in a truck and something like that. It was like $20 a month for unlimited, but it was only for a short time. So there's all these different things that you have to stay on top of.
All right. Well, you guys are helping everybody stay on top of it, and we really appreciate that. It's just so great to see folks that are doing what they love and then also sharing it with other people in a super useful way, right? It's not being fabulous. It's being useful. You guys are really sharing your lifestyle in a way that other people can benefit from that and, you know, go and live their own dreams. And I just think that that's wonderful, wonderful contribution to the universe that you guys are throwing out there. So that's great. Now, listen, everybody, you know that you can find all of the things that we've mentioned in this episode and all of the places that Heath and Alyssa hang out over on the show notes at rvfta.com. But Heath and Alyssa, why don't you just make sure that everybody knows where they can go if they want to kind of dive into more of your content, if they want to find your book, et cetera, et cetera. Where should they go?
Yes, we blog at heathandalyssa.com. We both have really awesome, hard to remember and spell names. So obviously we made that our domain name. But if you Google Heath and Alyssa Paget, you should be able to find it pretty easily. But we blog there about full-time RV life and running our business on the road. And Heath has the RV Entrepreneur podcast where he talks all about business all the time. That's his favorite thing to do.
Well, I interview full-time RVers who run a business from the road.
You do?
Yeah.
So Heath loves talking about business and RVing over there. And if you want to pick up my guide, you can go to heathandalyssa.com/guide. And that will redirect you over to Amazon. That's been one of our big business experiments, really, this past month is learning how to sell a product on Amazon. That was something we always wanted to do. And so you can check out my book over there.
All right, go help them with that experiment and buy their book over on Amazon.com. Hey, guys, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about full-time RVing. We hope to have you back really soon.
Thanks, Stephanie.
Thanks so much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Wow. Welcome back to the show, everybody, and a big thank you to Heath and Alyssa Padgett for coming onto the show. Make sure that you check them out on Instagram, and you check out the RV Entrepreneur Podcast, and you check out Alyssa Padgett's new book on Amazon for sure. So let's do our RV FTA News Roundup, and it is sponsored by our friends at Cabela's.
Cabela's is the world's foremost outfitter, and they have everything your family needs to get into the great outdoors. And this holiday season, we have been highlighting some of our favorite Cabela's products that would make great holiday gifts. This week, we want to talk about Cabela's Deluxe Camper's Kitchen.
And now that I've started cooking,
I love it, right?
Absolutely awesome. Love this thing. I really, truly do. It's so quick and easy to set up, and it provides so much counter space. It makes a great, great cook station.
Now, this was originally recommended to us by the lovely Kate Dunbar ages ago. And then we got it, and then we started to use it a lot because now we don't have an outdoor kitchen anymore in our toy hauler. So now if we're staying anywhere, I would say more than two nights we usually set it up
without
fail.
Yeah, if it's a weekend trip, occasionally we haven't set it up, but I really like to set it up, and I've been making breakfast out there in the mornings outside and just loving this piece of gear.
Yeah, tons of counter space, lots of good shelving. We set up our ice maker, cups, cans of seltzer out there so the kids can help themselves to drinks. You can keep it simple, or you can go all out and like put all your dishes out there in the hanging compartments.
Hang the cast iron out there on the hooks, right?
Yeah, exactly. You can do as little or as much as you want, just depending on how long you're staying.
My God, it comes with a water bladder, doesn't it?
It does.
We don't use that, but it comes with it.
All right, we are going to put the links to the one we have in the show notes for this episode over at rvfamilytravelatlas.com. And I saw that it was on sale last week. I'm not sure if it still is, but it was on a great sale. So I'll link to it in the show notes. You can also head over to cabelas.com and check out their complete line of outdoor products.
All right. We also have a big Camp Casual contest going on over at Instagram. So our friends at Camp Casual are releasing three new mugs this month. So head over to our Instagram account at RV Family Travel Atlas, look for the picture of the three mugs, and then follow the instructions to win. They are gorgeous. I love these mugs. My favorite one is the black one in the middle of the picture.
Well, you're not the only one, because if you scroll through the comments so far on that post, a lot of people are saying they love the black one. That was not my favorite one. I like the Desert Living. The Desert Living one. That's super cute.
Well, because I think that we were in Albuquerque recently.
It makes me want to jump in the car and go to like Arizona.
Go back to New Mexico or Arizona. Yeah. I think we're bound for the Southwest here.
And then there's also a travel map one, which is like a
totally
new take.
Cute.
Yeah. On the travel mug that they had in the last batch too. It's like a twist on that. So that's
I would head over there pronto, because that contest will probably wrap up like Sunday night or Monday or Tuesday or something like that. Now, the other big news, we are holding our first annual RVFTA Christmas Spectacular Friday night, December 8th at 8 p.m. on Facebook Live, if we can find a babysitter, and even if we can't. And I have no idea what we're going to do if we can't find a babysitter. We're looking. I think we have one. Janine Pettit will be there with us. And we literally have dozens of giveaways. We have well over $1,000, like $1,000 to $2,000 worth
of really. We have over $2,000.
I think over $2,000 worth of incredible RV and camping goodies. I can't believe how many things we have to give away. It's going to be truly a spectacular. So
all
join
right.
us.
And the last thing you need to know is it seems like a far ways away, but it's not. It is right around the corner. Tampa, baby, we're coming for you. January 17th through the 21st is the Florida RV Super Show in Tampa at the Florida State Fairgrounds.
My favorite RV show in America by far, because it's so much more than an RV show. It is the biggest RV show in America, in my opinion. Not that I counted the RVs, but I really think it is. And a lot of other people think it's the biggest one too. But more importantly, it's also like a festival. There's live music. There's entertainers. There's Magic Mike to make the balloon animals for the kids over and over again. And he never gets sick of our kids, even though they just keep coming up to him for more balloons.
All right. Now, this is also, even though Jeremy loves the entertainment, yes, there are RVs, and this is really the place to go and shop. If you want to
see more than 1,550 RVs, good luck seeing all of them.
So if you want to see a lot of different floor plans, across a lot of different budget and price points, this show is a fantastic place to do it. And also, if you want to see a lot of people from the RVFTA Podcast Network.
And we're going to have more details soon.
So it'll just be a really fun time to hang out and have a good party together at the Tampa RV Show.
All right. So I guess we're going to see you at the Florida RV Super Show.
We will see you there. Bye-bye.